These people have been patiently waiting.
Dr. Cook, are you the spokesperson for Douglas County?
I am.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. My apologies for keeping you late.
No, no worries.
We just had a...
We had a legal issue. We had to argue.
It was for a good cause.
Legal issue.
we're aware.
Are you ready for me to start?
Yeah, I'm looking for my survey. All right. Next item on the agenda is a presentation from Douglas County School District. Commissioner?
Thank you much, Madam Chair. And without further ado, I'll refer to Dr. Stephen Cook from Douglas County. This is our second presentation from a school district today. And Dr. Cook has brought several other members with him, if you wouldn't mind introducing them to the board and then start your presentation.
Absolutely.
Last question,
sure. So we have two presentations for you today. I'd like to introduce the people that will be participating. We have two schools that are represented here today. On the end, we have Pat McGraw. Pat is our Chief Development and Innovation Officer. He'll be participating with the Hope presentation. Next to him is legal counsel from Douglas County School District, Rob Ross, and he will also be a part of, he's representing our choice programming and will be part of the Hope presentation as well. Next to him is Sherida Peterson. She's the Executive Vice President of Academic Achievement for Hope. Kind of grouped our people fairly similarly here. Next to her here to my right is Heather O'Meara. She's the Chief Executive Officer for Hope School. And then down here on the end, we should have organized a little better, is Janelle Aon. She is our Director of Education for the Cleo Parker Robinson of Dance, and they are affiliated with Hope as well. And all of them will be kind of tag-teaming Hope's presentation. It's brief but compelling. For EDCSD's presentation, we have two people. I will be participating in some regards with that. I'm Steve Cook, once again, Assistant Superintendent for Secondary Education at Douglas County. And to my left is Christy Hart. She's the Acting Principal for EDCSD, and she will be leading that first presentation with regards to EDCSD. So if you guys are prepared, we're going to knock your socks off with these presentations. Oh, and we also have brought our expert, Laura Gorman, who is here to answer all technical questions.
I must miss that.
She's here to answer all technical questions for us. So, probably the most important one here right now.
You're saving it for last.
That's right.
Thank you so much for allowing us to present to you today. I wanted to start our presentation with a story about, or a quote from one of our parents. I think this really encapsulates the crux of what our students come to EDCSD looking for. And, you know, this particular child has found success in our school when at every brick and mortar school she'd been at, she had never been successful. And she went from a failing student to a straight A student in a semester because she finally found the niche that she needed to be successful. And I think our program speaks to that, and you'll see that today. When our school first started, the nation was moving towards a movement that not all students really learn in the same way, and the Douglas County School District wanted options for children, which is how the online school came about. The purpose has always been to deliver a rigorous and relevant education with the same quality standards that a student would receive in any Douglas County school. As we've begun to grow and our program has changed, we started out with a high percentage of very elite athletes, medically unable to attend students, a lot of homeschool students or students for whatever reason who couldn't be present in a physical school on a regular basis. However, over the course of the last probably 6 years or so, we've noticed a much higher percentage and a different population of students. Ones with higher physical and mental health needs, a lot more homebound students, a lot of expelled students, and a significantly higher percentage of credit deficient students in addition to those that we started with. So the diversity of our school has really changed over the course of the last 8 years. What we've learned from that is that a fully virtual school is really only successful for about 10% of our student population. And so as we began to make those changes, we included more strategies and more systems in place to help to support all needs, especially as our student population was changing. So one of the things that we've seen over the course of the last 5 years is definitely growth. This particular graphic really shows an upward trend in the last 3 years. We began to really implement some significant changes in the 12-13, or excuse me, in the 11-12 school year, and really began to see the full effect of those changes in most recent years. Those changes really include the addition of a significantly more rigorous curriculum, the addition of a balanced assessment system where we were able to provide immediate feedback for students to help them in their growth, and then most notably the change to a blended learning and a more personalized learning approach. One of the things that I really wanted to point out to you is the difference in the last 2 years. We really started to see a significant jump in performance. And if we're strictly looking at performance data between the 12-13 school year and the 13-14 school year, you'll notice that our achievement scores have really risen in and of themselves. Most notably, looking at the total percentage of performance growing from 42% to 60%. If we were looking at a total performance of just 60%, not including any test participation in our current performance rating, you'll note that that's a performance level rating. Obviously, this data isn't the whole picture of our school, and that's what we're here to really talk about today. One of the impacts of the new ruling about having some flexibility in test participation in regards to parent opt-out is a huge impact to our school. If that ruling had been in place in years previous, with our parent opt-outs, you'll note that in that school year, that's 13-14, that we would have had a 51.5% total rating, which is an improvement rating, which means we would no longer be on the clock. However, we recognize that was not the case, and we continue to work towards increasing test participation as a result of many efforts that we'll discuss in our plan moving forward as well. Our current school year, with that new ruling in place, it's been significantly easier for us in PARC testing in particular, which we are conducting today, for us to be able to have that 95% participation or parent opt-out. We've had a really much greater success this year in being able to secure that documentation than we have in years past. In moving forward, we have several goals really related to two particular aspects. Obviously, we want to continue to increase performance and achievement. However, we also want to look at participation because that is definitely a factor for our school. One of our first goals is a greater focus on creating a personalized learning plan. That really involves several components. We've improved our enrollment process where students actually come in for an interview and we talk about the individual needs of the student, both academically, mental health, lots of different resources that we could potentially put in place right from the beginning. In addition, we discussed with those parents really what skills are required to be successful and what types of strategies they can implement right away in order to help with performance from day one, versus recognizing that a student struggles a week or two into the school year. The second thing that we have that we've begun to implement is the development of quality assessment with real-time feedback. The district and we've been working really closely with the district leadership and amongst the school to create quality formative, interim, and summative assessments. That real-time data for our students and that real-time feedback has been incredibly valuable in attaining the growth that we want for each individual student. The next goal that we have is to create a positive learning environment through a blended learning program, curriculum, and support. The blended learning approach really, in terms of performance, when students have that buy-in, the engagement is huge for them. And so we wanted that opportunity for them to be able to come and be a part of it. And although we will still have a fully virtual model because of those students who require it, we really found that as we have begun to implement the blended learning, our engagement and participation, and then obviously our performance, has increased. We've we really have worked to up the ante of our curriculum in the last couple of years that obviously include that balance assessment, but a really rich and diverse curriculum with more opportunities for, that real life learning. And then in addition, we've hired some additional support staff that specifically target our more at-risk learners. They're called learning coaches, and they provide additional support, both academic and non-academic, lots of encouragement. They're our best, besides our teachers, they're our best cheerleaders for our kiddos, and no kid falls through the cracks at our school. In regards to participation, we have two main goals. The first goal is a greater focus on creating a personalized learning plan, which we talked about that through enrollment. And then our second one, again, is that sense of community through improved culture, using blended opportunities, communication, and test participation. One of the things I wanted to specifically focus on with participation is related to, again, that blended learning. As we've begun to develop what that looks like for our students, we've seen more and more participation in an academic setting. The learning is tremendous. Students who've participated in our blended learning this school year have a 1.0 higher GPA than those that do not participate, which speaks volumes to, how it's working. In terms of testing participation, we've set up testing locations all over the Douglas County School District at various geographic regions to increase the rate of test participation. And we publicize our events early. We set up a carpool. So we're working to really address those needs with specifically to participation, because that seems to be our largest hurdle when it comes to our overall rating as a school. Oh, sorry. I was one slide behind myself. Thanks. You should have moved me along.
So the way the district intends to support EDCSD, EDCSD is a unique school, and as Ms. Hart mentioned, the school started out as 100% online school and has kind of morphed through the years. And part of that has created a need for this blended learning approach. So one of the ways that we want to help the district or help the school is to help them build that environment. This is the first year that they've taken on this blended approach. And that's a little bit of a facility issue, because now we've got these kids who in some cases are traveling from all over the place to find a facility that is useful that they could then meet at either one day a week, 2 days a week, as they see fit and how that might look. And so we've identified a location that we can actually support even growth in that. They've done a fantastic job this year of managing with the space and the opportunity that they've been provided with. But there's also, you can see there's a desire and a want for more space and more opportunity for that. So that's one of the things that we're going to do straight up front. But more importantly, there's some very specific academic goals that we've set to help support them with. The first one is the continued training of the Guaranteed and Viable curriculum that we have in Douglas County. It's a very robust and rigorous curriculum. And we have been extensively training teachers for a couple of years now on this, and that is going to continue to work. And there is a little bit of a lag time, I think, and we're catching up to that with getting that action and that penetration to the student level. We're starting to see some very strong impact with that, and we will continue that development. That piece is really built out well, and we have a lot of professional development to help teachers in that growth. The second one is... Absolutely.
Clarifying question so I understand. When you're talking about the curriculum, is this the same curriculum that is the district curriculum?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Our teachers implement the same curriculum as any other Douglas County school is implementing.
Does this give you the opportunity to do some online stuff with the other kids?
You mean between schools? Yeah. Between our school and a brick and mortar? Yeah, actually we have several students engaged. Most of those students are on a part-time basis with us, but we have a lot of elementary in particular students where a particular course, either a foreign language or gifted and talented high-level maths, are not offered at their school because of cost effectiveness and or just the volume of kids to take it. Staffing is difficult for them. And so I partner with those elementary schools to provide gifted and talented programming in addition to, we do that in some regards in a remediation way as well.
Thank you. Sorry.
Absolutely. And this is the work that we're doing across the entire district, not just for EDCSD, but this is the work that we also deemed to be some of the most important work for all of our teachers to be a part of. The second piece is this: we've seen immediate success with the blended learning model, and how do we then develop that so that we are getting a more maximized, I think, for our dollar, just a more impact for our dollar. And so this is the first year that blended learning has taken place, and we are seeing significant achievement differences and growth with students that are participating in this model. As we mentioned before, that the student has changed. There is a kid that is now benefiting. Most of the students are benefiting from this blended learning model, and this is the first year of implementation, and we see this as a huge opportunity for us to expand that training and that possibility, and that will continue to happen. And then the last piece is really about that balanced assessment system, which very simply is just a way of making sure we use a kind of a UBD model, understanding by design and knowing where we want our kids to go before we build the lessons that we intend to teach them, with this outcome in mind at the end of the learning. And then what are those assessments along the way that are going to make sure we're on the right path with them? And that is a pretty complex system that we're expecting teachers to do, and it's taken multiple years to implement. Essentially, it's those formative assessments to make sure I know where my kids are and how does that look in an online experience, and how does that look with regards to what student learning is actually happening, and how are we going to then adjust and account for off-ramps as needed for kids that maybe aren't on the right path that we need them to be on. That piece is also a very layered kind of approach, and you start off kind of at the 30,000-foot level and dig right down into the micro level with how do you handle an individual specific student. And the last piece I would mention about that is the cultural piece of EDCSD. We started it off as an online school 8 years ago, and we've changed it now to meet the needs of our kids. It's a very large part of our strategic plan with all of our students is to offer them choice and opportunity to have a world-class education wherever they are. And so personalized learning is, I think you might have heard Ms. Hart mention that, means that wherever a kid is, we are going to take them where they are and provide them the opportunities to move forward, measure those opportunities, and try to keep them to a level of achievement. And that's for every kid in every school in Douglas County, not just EDCSD or HOPE for that matter. And so that is a part of the cultural piece. You heard her mention the piece of creating that sense of community when a kid comes in. Many of these kids are never in this area. So how do you create a sense of community when you enroll a student into EDCSD so that they do feel some sense of attachment to that building without the brick and mortar in cases and sometimes? And when it's, we say it's time for presenting our learning through an assessment, through a state assessment, through whatever means, through PARC, through TCAP, CMAS, what's that connection so that I do feel a sense of not only do I want to perform for my teachers, but I want to perform for my school? And how do we build that? You know, that's, I don't want to simply say it's down to that connection, but we want to make sure we attack all of those things. We would be glad to entertain questions. Laura's turn now.
Thanks for the presentation. And for EDCSD, you said your growth and your outcomes are improving.
Yeah.
Your participation is not.
Right.
Do you see any way to fix the participation problem outside of forcing children to take it?
Well, that's incredibly difficult. Our boundaries are the entire state of Colorado, and so forcing a kid to drive from Gunnison to take the PARC test is fairly unrealistic for that particular, you know, in those particular instances, which is why we've tried to, those kids that are local, that, and oftentimes our families say, well, it's just transportation, we can't get our kids there. That's why we utilize the full testing window, and we secure space across the district in multiple schools to try to increase. We've actually seen a fairly good turnout of students that can't, for whatever reason, logistically make it to Castle Rock, but they can make it to Parker, and so they test in Parker instead. So we've seen a fairly good
So you've
turnout
seen
there.
Some improvement in the
Well, at this point, we're in the middle of PARC testing now, and we're just implementing this, but our schedule of kids that previously had not maybe tested with us are coming to our makeups. They're scheduled to come, and they're like, we can't make it to Castle Rock, but we can make it to Parker. We'll see you on Tuesday.
That's great.
Yeah.
If they're online tests, why is there not a way to make that work?
Well, I would love that. If you, yeah.
If you say so, we'll take it.
We'll take that.
Get those Pearson people.
So let me, here's the answer to that. They have to be run on a district server, and they have to be run in a controlled testing environment.
Right. And mm-hmm. So I was just going to modify my question. Is it not possible to latch off here in Gunnison, to latch onto a brick and mortar in that area and work something out with them to make this workable at the time that they're doing the assessments?
Yeah, they're actually they're cashed to us based on primary enrollments. We even our part-time enrollment students test at their home schools, but any student that's enrolled with us full-time is cashed to our testing, which means our proctor must administer the test.
We have a ways to go. Well, we're just learning with this whole system
seems
anyway.
Like we could offer some flexibility there.
Thank you.
I was just going to say that in the CMAS testing, we saw much better participation. So I think that we're starting to see that as the online option is available and those students are more comfortable in an online environment, we're starting to see a little bit of that kind of shift that this is not a paper test. So while they're working in an online environment every day, that test is just another. So I think we did see a difference in the CMAS testing for EDCSD participation in that sense. So we're hoping that we continue to see that trend tick upward.
One of the other things that we're doing specifically to address test participation is really reaching out to parents on an individual level. Obviously, the communication in regards to testing, its importance, and the transparency of how we will help make this work for your kiddo has been really valuable. I actually physically called every single student that did not come for testing yesterday, and we made those same phone calls today. I think hearing from me is helpful. I mean, not in a punitive way, but
not in a mean way.
You know, yeah, we want your kid to be here. So,
more questions? Yes, Jim.
So it's great to hear folks presenting from Douglas County, to my home district. My question is, I'm not clear how EDCSD and Hope Online relate. Are they unrelated? Two different schools? Are they related?
Two completely different schools.
Different schools. Okay, got it. So then, let me ask one question. I'll ask of Hope later too, and that is, what's the one thing the Department of Education could do to support you in increasing student achievement? I mean, we've looked at the support process that's supposed to begin in year one, right, through the Department of Education, and then there's the state review panel process. What is in place? What has helped you the most? What could help you exponentially get over this obstacle? What can be done to support? What could work?
I was just going to say about the state review panel process that we already have our visit scheduled for the end of March. We did not have a site visit last year. We had a document review. So this year we'll have both the document review and the site visit. And you know, honestly, I think we're looking forward to that, to have another perspective on what can be, what are some achievements, what are some strategies that we can use. I think as we move towards a blended learning environment, not only for EDCSD, but across, further resources in that regard from CDE. I know that they have a department that's working on that, but what strategies are working and what strategies are not? And what populations are they working with? What populations are they not working with? So some of those things would be helpful as we move forward with this. And as far as participation goes, I know it's a struggle for many schools and many online schools. And you know, we have heard different strategies, but some kind of resource bank or more connections between the online schools to get some ideas.
Can I answer your question before you follow up? One of the things that we talk about a lot is the uniqueness of EDCSD as a school. And so, as a general rule, the schools in Douglas County achieve pretty highly. And this school can draw, because of the resources they can offer children, some of our more struggling students. And so, in a way, what we're doing is giving students opportunity to have a choice. And these are all choices. And so we provide this choice for students that, that is, in many cases, working out for them. And so there, if there is flexibility in that the fact that these kids choose this because it works for them, because of mental health needs, because of physical needs or whatever, that we aren't then placing a similar kind of judgment on their performance that, that because of what options they chose for. And that's
is what you're saying, that a disproportionate number of very needy kids choose this school, and so therefore,
yes,
because
yes,
of the number of years they're behind, the number of years that it takes to catch up is different than the average student, perhaps.
Yes.
Correct. Approximately 40% of our incoming high school students are credit deficient.
Right. So that's a huge descriptor of your population. Is it so that the state review panel process comes at the right time, a little late? This is a question for the CDE staff. I think the vendor for that is Schoolworks. Am I right about that?
That is correct.
And what, who is Schoolworks, and do they know our state and our districts and schools enough, given that I think they're out of state, to really do that work in the context of our unique needs in Colorado and the unique needs of this school? So can someone speak to any of those questions?
Hey, Madam Chair, you want to speak to that, Keith?
I'm just concerned that the districts are getting the kind of help they need just in time.
Our opinion
enough.
Is that they are, but I'll let Keith address that since you asked the question.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, I can have Lisa Medler come down, and she can speak to that a little bit later if you'd like. She helps run the state review panel and the unified improvement planning process, and an RFP was put out as a response to that legislation for somebody to run the state review panel and serve that need. And Schoolworks was one of the groups that applied and was awarded that RFP. And so they're right now working and scheduling with school districts, but it's the first time that we've had a group that's doing that for the state. They just got started. Before that, it was the department managing that. And over the course of time, we've been able to get some additional resources from the legislature to help fund it, because before it was strictly volunteers that were willing to spend time just doing document reviews for the state and then giving feedback to school districts, and it just was very difficult to get people to commit to that type of investment of time to really do a thoughtful, good job. So the state gave us some funding about a year ago to do that. We did the RFP, and that's where Schoolworks came into play, and they're just getting started with that piece. So if you'd like, I can have her come down and speak a little bit more to that process if you want.
Well, what would help me, and we don't have to do it today, but given that this is the mechanism by which we're supporting schools in the closing moments of the game, in a sense, I'd love to see an example of Schoolworks reports, what they do when they come out, what type of advice or recommendations they give, how detailed they are, and really how helpful is it, I guess, because we're counting on this mechanism to really help our schools. So she doesn't have to come down right now, but
okay,
at some point I'd love to see the reports.
Madam Chair, I would say too that keep in mind the state review panel, their feedback, while it could be helpful for a school and it could be helpful for a district, that's not the intent. The intent is information for you, for the state board, for your deliberation, for your decision making. It's not intended necessarily to be a support or a mechanism support for the school or the district. It's a byproduct. Sometimes they'll be able to get some good information out of what. But the statutory purpose of the state review panel is feedback for the state board to make decisions about the clock.
So again, maybe I could ask one more follow-up. Then I'd love to know what the support process is beginning in year one that the CDE orchestrates, maybe bringing in additional helps, just so that we can see what type of help's been provided from year one, I think, is as required by statute. So thank you.
Madam Chair, so we can surely go through the unified improvement plans, the reviews that are given by any school that falls into priority improvement or turnaround gets a review by the CDE staff. The district, the LEA, gets feedback on the plans, the quality of the plans, and then they work with the charters, in this case, to make the improvements. Ultimately, the district, the LEA, is responsible for whether they want to keep these schools moving forward and the interventions that they'd like to place on those schools. So the districts hold the responsibility for their schools. But we can certainly get that information.
Where are we on time? Do we need
10 more minutes.
We've got
for both Hope and EDCSD, or just EDCSD? That's why I was wondering what our process is, because we still need to hear from Hope online.
We just had this one. Then we had the lieutenant.
Don't want to shortchange you guys.
Let me just ask a question while folks are doing this.
We haven't had 15, 20 minutes. We have plenty of time.
But we haven't heard anything from Hope online yet, right?
Oh, you're going to do that as a separate. Okay, that isn't what it shows on.
So is there a cohort that you guys are a part of so that you can share? Do you know of other, I mean, you identify uniqueness, but I think it related to your district. It's a unique program in your district. Yeah, but is there a cohort of groups around the state?
We've actually reached out to the two CDEs, blended learning people, to kind of really begin
connect
that
you?
Process.
Yeah.
Okay. We've have our staff has really made connections with Falcon Virtual because they are a high-achieving online school with a blended model. And we actually are beginning to look at how they use blended in regards to student achievement and participation as a model from which to work from.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Heather, you have a presentation, separate presentation as a part of this?
Yes, we have a separate presentation for
Hope. About how long a time do you need for that?
I think we planned about 10 minutes for the presentation. And
about
We planned 10 minutes for the presentation, and we expected we'd have about 10 minutes of questions.
Are we about finished with the other part? Or do you have anything else, questions?
Thank you.
Anything else you
can
tell us?
All right, Heather.
Pat's going to kick us off.
Thank you very much. One of the things that I think I appreciate about being in Douglas County is that it's our expectation that all of our, and if we can go to the front of the presentation, our expectations are that all of our schools align with our strategic plan. So Hope, EDCSD, all the different ones, they align with our priorities of safety, choice, world-class education, and system performance. So a lot of the frameworks that we have set in place will be similar for all structures that we have within the system. When you talk about Hope, Hope's a blended learning program. You know, and I think there's a lot of misnomers about it in terms of what we're doing and how it's set up. But essentially, it combines the best elements for online and offline instruction. Students still, they go to a learning center every single day. This isn't, they're not doing this from home. They go to a learning center every day where they have access to licensed instructors in the learning centers. Also, the learning strategies, depending on the age of the kids, when people talk about online schools, they think, well, they're going in and they're sitting in front of a computer or doing that. Young kids may only be doing online instruction for an hour and a half a day. They'll have classroom instruction for the remainder of that time. So, but they are in the school, in the learning center for the entire time that they're doing that. So the amount of time that they do that depends on the needs of the student. Now, I talked about the why on this quite a bit in terms of what's unique about the Hope program, and I remember this when we first started working with them in Douglas County when they came in. They came in and they said that the primary indicator of success for kids that are involved in some sort of an online program is a caring adult that's going to be able to work with them in this curriculum, whether they're doing it at home or in a learning center. Well, I think what's unique about Hope System is the fact that they've chosen to partner with people in the community, with different groups within the community, to do this work at learning centers to provide that caring adult that's going to help connect with that person through there. It's really interesting. I think this community focus is one of the things that makes Hope somewhat unique, and it allows things like dual language support, small class sizes, and small learning centers as they do this. One of the things we've just gotten done talking about the state review panel a little bit, the report that we received from them last September talks about Hope this way. They say this school is providing a necessary method of delivering educational services to students who, for a wide variety of reasons, may not otherwise be able to receive an education in the traditional educational environment. So it's a little bit different. Now, in the then and now, when we talk about when Hope was there, and I think it's important to talk about how they've changed over the years as they're doing different things. If you look in 2009-10, 2,900 students, about 2,700 students in 2014-15. But there's a vast difference in terms of the demographics and the types of students that they have right now. For example, in 2009, there were 15% ELL students in their schools. Now there's 45%. That number's triple in the time that they've done that. And I think the thing that's significant about that is they've adjusted their programming. What I've really seen in the last 2 years is they've done things to adjust their programming to meet the needs of the unique clientele that they do have. Now, this is another thing, the learning centers, these community partnerships that I was talking about earlier. Well, when they first came in, they had about 50 via different quality processes and things that have happened. Right now, there's only 35 centers. So about the same number of students and yet a large number of small. And I'll tell you, this hasn't been without pain. People get mad about this because they're very serious about trying to do what's best for kids and do the different things within that, and they've held people accountable towards that. And, you know, as the authorizer, we get a lot of the feedback and the things that are there, but I can tell you sincerely that the quality assurance teams that we send in from the district and the people that are there, they're really looking at what's best for kids and how they're going to do things. A couple of other quick things. Staff ratios. If you notice, and you'll see why in a minute, we want to thank the state board for the title pilot that we've been working in there. If you look, the teacher-to-student ratios have gone down dramatically over the last 5 years, and the mentor-to-student. Mentors are people in community members that don't necessarily have an education degree that are working within the learning centers, but they do have the same qualifications as educational assistants or people that are within those sites. The ratios are about the same for the mentors, but the qualifications of the mentors have increased dramatically over the 5 years. I was looking at a couple different things. They were talking about 40 to 45% of the mentors within these learning centers are bilingual. Now, they're talking about 20 mentors. One of the programs that we've done from Douglas County with the HOPE set is we've had an alternative licensure program. 20 HOPE mentors have become licensed teachers through the program that we have there. The staffing, if you look at that, in terms of general ed, is pretty stable. But if you look, the reading interventionists and basically the specialists, we've increased the numbers there within HOPE. A lot of this, once again, due to increases in title funding and just special programming that we've done. We're really looking at trying to meet the needs of these students where they're at. Finally, I'm going to talk about a couple things, and Rob Ross, our legal counsel, will talk in a little bit about more specifics in terms of some of these programs. But one of the things that we've determined is with a different clientele, we have to have different systems that we can use to reach those kids. If you look, we had one core content provider really at that point in time. They were using Compass at that time. Now there's two additional core online providers that we'll talk more about later. And a bunch of different intervention systems that we're going to do that. And one of the criteria is alignment with ELL programming. That was one of the real big factors that we used in terms of selecting these programs. So all this stuff that we have in here is showing a shift in terms of what's happening for within this. Now, obviously, the Title I pilot has been huge. A lot of different things that you're going to see, that, and I think some of the numbers eventually are going to come back with that, but I think they said over 500 students in K-5 and 115 middle school students are being affected by the Title I prod. We have a school improvement support grant that we are using that one of the things that they've looked at that they think that are really going to improve what they're doing now is they started last year with this grant to bring in offline curriculum, it's called Engage New York, that they're going to utilize to essentially work at the time that they're not on those computers. We're going to really look at it, trying to get a more consistent system and work for the kids that are doing that kind of work. The EAR, Expelled at-Risk Student Services, they've brought in, there's mental health support, there's also work with these kids in terms of decision-making and making good choices. One of the things that's kind of fun is they have determined that within these learning centers and that engaging kids in different activities have really improved that. And we have an expert down at the end of the table that I hope you guys can talk to a little bit about one of those. But they anticipate they've gone from like 70% to 90% rate in terms of kids involved in activities in the different HOPE centers now. So they're just trying to engage them. And these are all at very low cost to the student, because there's not a lot of money for that. And it's also set up in such a way that they can access it in a very cost-efficient way. Now, in terms of some results, and I'm going to talk about some short-term results and some cohort results, and I'll try to be very specific because the trends are important to note. But one of the things that they found out, high mobility is a big problem with kids in the online community or kids that are in any of these types of programs. But they found that there have been improvements, and I've got a couple of graphs that we'll talk about those cohorts in a minute, for those kids that have been with HOPE over 2 years. There is decreased mobility. They've seen in the last year that the kids from the statistics they've been gathering from re-enrollments, it's gone from about 52 to 60%. It's improved. The number of kids that are staying at HOPE, the mobility is going down a little bit, and I think they've got programs, whether it be the activities or more parent engagement or whatever they're going to do with that, that they're getting more folks in that. Now, in this present year with the new programming, what they're seeing is they're seeing increased benchmark scores in reading for their KT students. Okay, and they can talk better that than me. But this is stuff that they're seeing with Engage New York or with the different programs that they have for that. They're also seeing an increased average grade percentile in their core content. That's current year statistics that they can come back to. And this increased student engagement, one of the things they found out, and I thought this was really interesting when we talked about it, was the fact that these activities are not only engaging the students more, but they're really engaging the parents more and the community more, and they're getting those people to come and become a more active participant at the school as a result of some of these activities. These two little cohort maps, and these are three-year cohorts, so kids that have been within the school 3 years. If you notice, there's, and they're modest improvements upward in reading and writing, and a downward trend, similar to what some of the state trends in mathematics. But I guess the important part about both of these graphs is that they do show that some of the kids that are there, the programming that they have, I think, is working. But they didn't have established math programming in the last 2 years. So another one of the adjustments that's been made is bringing in both online and offline help for kids in the mathematics. So they're using this data. This is for the middle school cohort, and this was for the elementary school cohort. Okay, and you can see there's somewhat similar trends to them. And by the way, it's always fun because you can, depending on the scaling, you can make these graphs look really cool. But you can see that the programming that HOPE's using is being used to drive this. So I'll turn this over to Rob now.
So good afternoon. I know my title's legal counsel, but as many of us in public education, we all wear several hats, and part of mine is working with Pat and the charter schools as a liaison. What I'm going to talk about is looking forward. What's the plan for HOPE and the district's support of that moving forward? So you'll see in the UIP that one of the strategies is to align the online and offline curriculum. So what HOPE has done over the last year or so, Pat was talking about those new curricular programs, is to have a better cohesion with what's happening online and what's happening with the actual, you know, face-to-face with in the learning centers with the students. So there's an alignment with that. The other part that HOPE has been working on is looking at aligning their curriculum with the district's guaranteed and viable curriculum that Dr. Cook was talking about, you know, leveraging the best of that in the environments that they have. That I think that it's pretty rigorous. It's been a lot of work for Douglas County School District with the neighborhood schools. It's going to be work for HOPE as well, but it's work that's well placed. It's a good direction to take. Pat mentioned the partnership with families in the community, and what HOPE did was went out and got some expertise and looked at their data, look at what their parents want, what their students want, what their achievement is. And some of the themes that came from that are that if students stay with HOPE, they do better. And getting students to stay, as Pat was talking about, can have a lot of components to it. One of them is the athletics, the activities, drawing the families in so that they feel a sense of community with the centers, and then they'll stay. That will, the outside expertise confirmed what anybody thought inside, is that if you have that sense of belonging and community, performance will follow. So that's a focus of the strategy as well. Increasing professional development, part of the programming that HOPE is looking at and has started to implement is enhancing the ELL programming. Pat told you about the increase in ELL population with HOPE. Well, to go along with that, you need to have the strategies that are tried and true to help ELL students achieve. And that includes professional development for those who are working in the learning centers, and also to look at what's happening with their online and offline curriculum to make sure that those are fully accessible, that you can leverage the best of those for all students, including ELL students. Again, we talked about the homeschool partnership and communications with parents. That's going to be critical. In terms of accountability, what HOPE and Douglas County partnership has done is, you know, there's tremendous communication between the Choice Office and HOPE Online. Pat McGraw has been leading that. That's going to be, I guess, me more in the future. But with the whole team available with Douglas County School District working with HOPE, we're going to continue to do that, have our oversight, and so that's external. Now, internal to HOPE, they also have their own internal meetings. Their learning center directors get together. They're going to talk about these strategies, the new curriculum, professional development. They have a quality assurance team so that they can address issues as they come up. And they also have their own advisory board that can also advise, you know, give their view on things, make sure that these systems are working, look at the data, and make adjustments. The HOPE board as well is deeply involved in what happens with the HOPE Learning Centers and what's happening with their students, reviewing all the information, providing guidance and direction for HOPE. We've discussed the CDE review team. We did have a phone call with SchoolView, and to answer the question about that, Ms. Shuffle, there was the folks that they put on that team for that phone call, they actually have experience with online education. So it'll be very interesting to us to get that viewpoint and see what kind of advice and expertise they can bring to us with an independent look at what's going on at HOPE. So we're looking forward to that, just as EDCSD is. HOPE is also gathering tremendous amounts of data and looking for more, and they're going to be analyzing that with the help of CU. To see how they can leverage the best they've got and address more deficits as they come up. They're also looking, in terms of accountability, to see more activity happening during the instructional day. So they're looking at to see how can we best use the time that we have with these students and their families. So this is all part of their improvement action plans. They also are looking for an increased supervision level in terms of having principals assigned to have a greater educational oversight over what's happening in the learning centers. I'm sure Heather can talk more about that. And again, professional development is critical in all of this. Pat mentioned that the learning center numbers have decreased in order to get the best quality centers operating. That is going to also require that those principals deliver professional development in addition to having professional development on a broader scale. HOPE Online is able to participate in Douglas County's professional development. They've done so particularly in the SPED arena, so they have access to the expertise that we can bring and that we bring into the district to help us with addressing, for example, SPED students, and HOPE Online takes advantage of that. So the next steps, we talked about hiring those principals. We anticipate that the turnaround network will be something that's available for HOPE for the expertise that can bring, and kind of the bouncing of ideas of how improvements can be made in schools. Pat talked about the title pilot, which has been very helpful. We're looking for an expansion of that. Again, bringing families completely into this process, HOPE is looking at a literacy project for parents. Most of the parents, well, a lot of the parents surveyed have said that they've had difficulty in communicating with schools in the past, and HOPE Online hopes to bridge that gap and make HOPE a family learning center, not just a student learning center. And then having communication, effective communication to parents in an accessible way, that's a centerpiece of the entire success plan for HOPE. So the team is here, happy to answer questions regarding HOPE's plans.
Folks, do you have questions? Deb?
Yeah, I'd just like to say thank you for the presentation. I'd just like to applaud your efforts. I think you're serving a really important niche for kids. You're really trying to work with homes, think out of the box, think about what can work, and I just applaud the work. I think it's wonderful that you exist, and I know you're struggling to try to deal with the achievement issues. I just have a question. It looks like your demographics have changed dramatically. You've added teachers, especially reading interventionists. You've reduced the number of centers. You've improved your student-teacher ratio. You've added a blended model. You've experienced achievement gains. What is the one thing that could accelerate growth so that you can continue to do the work you're doing? And maybe it's a rhetorical question, but I'd like to hear it from you. If I were in your shoes, I'd say more teachers. But what would you say?
Did you read my mind? Yes. First of all, I want to say thank you to the Douglas County people who have been incredible to us. And we believe that their interest in blended came from us. Is that right? But at any rate, it really is more adults with kids. We know that. And especially adults who, in fact, are not only called to this work, but are also experts in this work. And as we know, as we look at our population, as we look at the expanding number of ELL students that we serve and the families that we serve, the more people that we can bring into this movement, the more adults who believe that these children have every right and the potential and the opportunities to be all they can be, regardless of where they've been before, that will make a difference. And this title program has made huge, huge changes for us. And so if I could, yesterday I was at a tour with CDE folks, as a matter of fact, and in our lowest performing and in most impacted ELL center, K-12, it was actually two centers. And she said to me, what would you do? What would it look like? And I said, it would look like more people. It would look like a general ed teacher in every center with 50 or fewer children, and two if it were more than that.
So just one follow-up. And so are there certain thresholds you have to meet to get access to more funds so that you could hire more teachers? In other words, what's the impediment? You've obviously done a great job increasing or decreasing your ratio, so you have more teachers to fewer students to one teacher. But in terms of even making that better, is there a certain break point you're looking for to be eligible for grants, or what can get you there?
I think there's a few things we need to do. HOPE is an online school. Even though from the beginning we've had a blended learning model, as an online school or a blended learning school, we do provide a good amount of our funding to our community-based learning centers, so we could provide facilities and we could provide mentors. So I think one of the things we need to look at is how could we expand our, as an online school, we're also funded less than a traditional brick-and-mortar school, and we're not eligible for some of the grants and other funding that a traditional school can get. I think we need to look at applying for more grants so we can provide more teachers and more support. I think we've done a great job working with Douglas County to provide additional professional development and really grow our community supporters, our mentors. So when Pat used the statistic that we have 20 mentors who became involved with HOPE and they are now licensed teachers, as we grow the support in the community, we grow our community partnerships with folks that understand the students we're working with and come from that environment, I think we'll have the most success.
Excuse me, so you have 20 teachers and you have 2,000 and something students?
We have 25 general ed teachers, we have 22 reading teachers, and we have 20 special educators. So that's the licensed folks.
Right, so that's yes. 60, 70 something people? How many people do you have?
HOPE in total, so when you think of just our education staff or just our teachers, as Sharda mentioned, I think our teaching staff is probably a total of about 80 people between our special educators, our reading interventionists, and our general ed teachers. Okay, but we so also, with that,
my colleague just gave me a handout where the ratio is 1 to 54. Okay. Don't you think this is kind of low, especially for high needs kids who really do need that face to face?
I think there's two pieces of that. We're talking to the numbers of the ratio of student to teacher. We didn't talk about the ratio of mentor to student, which is 1 to 16. But I think, yes, and I think to Dr. Shuffle's question, I think we would impact achievement if we had more teachers. But I think we're working within the budget that we have to do the best that we can. And we've, with the title pilot expansion and others...
I'm Deb, sorry. Please, Deb.
Let's
go on.
Wrap it up, please. The governor, lieutenant.
I know. Governor, I just wanted to ask a question.
No, I'm just saying.
So, how much does the school get paid for every student as compared to just a regular public school?
So, a quick comparison without having
money.
Yes, I understand.
Dollars.
I understood the question. So, HOPE's funding is about $7,500 per student, which includes all of the categoricals and all of the federal funding. When I did a quick analysis of DPS's funding, that number, using comparable numbers, that number was over 11,000, was about 10,000.
Interesting. So,
any other questions?
That's folks? A lot of money for.
Deb, did you have another question?
I just had a follow-on. It's encouraging that this Title I pilot has been so successful because it's allowed you to hire reading interventionists. So that's been huge for them.
Can I just make a comment,
sure.
Chairman?
Quickly, please.
Yes. I just want to comment. I had the opportunity to go visit a HOPE Learning Center, and we have some pictures here I can pass around. That, you know, there's a narrative out there that HOPE Online Learning Centers are sad little places. This was a wonderful site. There were teachers there. There were mentors there. A lot of great things happening, and I think that HOPE's experience with the Title I portability, that has to keep happening. Those students need those interventions as much as any student in DPS. So.
And they've been with us for such a long time.
Yes, wonderful. So, thank you.
We've seen academic results here today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Very interesting. All of them.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.